Section 5. The War Ends. An American Story. In 1945, Captain Luther Fletcher entered the German concentration camp at Buchenwald with a group of Germans who were being forced to see what their country had done. In his diary, Fletcher described what they witnessed. They saw blackened skeletons and skulls in the ovens of the crematorium. In the yard outside, they saw a heap of white human ashes and bones. The dead were stripped of their clothing and lay naked, many stacked like cordwood waiting to be burned at the crematory. At one time, 5,000 had been stacked on the vacant lot next to the crematory. At headquarters of the SS troops who ran the place were lampshades made from human skin. Often the guide said the SS wished to make an example of someone in killing him. They used what I call hay hooks, catching him under the chin and the other in the back of the neck. He hung in this manner until he died. Quoted in World War II, from the battlefront to the home front. The Third Reich collapses. Well before the war ended, President Roosevelt and other Allied leaders were aware that the Nazis were committing atrocities. In 1943, the Allies officially declared that they would punish the Nazis for their crimes after the war. Meanwhile, Roosevelt was convinced that the best way to put an end to the concentration camps was to destroy the Nazi regime. To do that, he believed the Allies had to dedicate their resources to breaking out of Normandy, liberating France, and conquering Germany. Although D-Day had been a success, it was only the beginning. Surrounding many fields in Normandy were hedgerows, dirt walls several feet thick covered in shrubbery. The hedgerows had been built to fence in cattle and crops, but they also enabled the Germans to fiercely defend their positions. The Battle of the Hedgerows ended on July 25, 1944, when 2,500 American bombers blew a hole in the German lines, enabling American tanks to race through the gap. As the Allies broke out of Normandy, the French resistance, French civilians who had secretly organized to resist the German occupation of their country, staged a rebellion in Paris. When the Allied forces liberated Paris on August 25th, they found the streets filled with French citizens celebrating their victory. 3 weeks later, American troops were within 20 miles, or 32 kilometers, of the German border. The Battle of the Bulge. As the Allies closed in on Germany, Hitler decided to stage one last desperate offensive. His goal was to cut off Allied supplies coming through the port of Antwerp, Belgium. The attack began just before dawn on December 16, 1944. 6 inches, or 15 centimeters, of snow covered the ground, and the weather was bitterly cold. Moving rapidly, the Germans caught the American defenders by surprise. As the German troops raced west, their lines bulged outward, and the attack became known as the Battle of the Bulge. Part of the German plan called for the capture of the town of Bastogne, where several important roads converged. If the Allies held Bastogne, it would greatly delay the German advance. American reinforcements raced to the town, arriving just ahead of the Germans. The Germans then surrounded the town and demanded that the Americans surrender. The American commander sent back a one-word reply: "Nuts." Shortly after the Germans surrounded the Americans, Eisenhower ordered General Patton to rescue them. 3 days later, faster than anyone expected in the midst of a snowstorm, Patton's troops slammed into the German lines. As the weather cleared, Allied aircraft began hitting German fuel depots. On Christmas Eve, out of fuel and weakened by heavy losses, the German troops driving toward Antwerp were forced to halt. 2 days later, Patton's troops broke through to Bastogne. Although fighting continued for 3 weeks, the United States had won the Battle of the Bulge. On January 8th, the Germans began to withdraw. They had suffered more than 100,000 casualties and lost many tanks and aircraft. They now had very little left to prevent the Allies from entering Germany. VE Day, the war ends in Europe. While American and British forces fought to liberate France, the Soviet Union began a massive attack on German troops in Russia. By the time the Battle of the Bulge ended, the Soviets had driven Hitler's forces out of Russia and back across Poland. By February 1945, Soviet troops had reached the Oder River. They were only 35 miles or 56 kilometers from Berlin. As the Soviets crossed Germany's eastern border, American forces attacked Germany's western border. By the end of February 1945, American troops had fought their way to the Rhine River, Germany's last major line of defense in the west. Then on March 7th, American soldiers captured the heights above the town of Remagen. Gazing down at the town, platoon leader Emmett J. Burroughs was amazed at what he saw. The Ludendorff Bridge across the Rhine was still intact. The Germans had not blown it up. The American troops raced across the bridge, driving back the German defenders. By the end of the day, American tanks were across the Rhine. Hearing the news, General Bradley yelled, "Hot dog, this will bust them wide open!" As German defenses crumbled, American troops raced east, closing to within 70 miles or 113 kilometers of Berlin. On April 16th, Soviet troops finally smashed through the German defenses on the Oder River. 5 days later, they reached the outskirts of Berlin. Deep in his Berlin bunker, Adolf Hitler knew the end was near. On April 30th, 1945, he put a pistol in his mouth and pulled the trigger. His secretary, Martin Bormann, carried Hitler's body outside, doused it in gasoline, and set it on fire. Before killing himself, Hitler chose Grand Admiral Karl Dönitz to be his successor. Dönitz tried to surrender to the Americans and British while continuing to fight the Soviets, but Eisenhower insisted on unconditional surrender. On May 7, 1945, Germany surrendered unconditionally. The next day, May 8, 1945, was proclaimed VE Day for victory in Europe. Reading check. Explaining. Why was the Battle of the Bulge such a disastrous defeat for Germany? Japan is defeated. Unfortunately, President Roosevelt did not live to see the defeat of Germany. On April 12, 1945, while vacationing in Warm Springs, Georgia, he suffered a stroke and died. His vice president, Harry S. Truman, became president during this difficult time. The next day, Truman told reporters, "Boys, if you ever pray, pray for me now. When they told me yesterday what had happened, I felt like the moon, the stars, and all the planets had fallen on me." Despite feeling overwhelmed, Truman began at once to make decisions about the war. Although Germany surrendered a few weeks later, the war with Japan continued to intensify, and Truman was forced to make some of the most difficult decisions of the war during his first 6 months in office. Uncommon Valor on Iwo Jima. On November 24, 1944, bombs fell on Tokyo for the first time since the 1942 Doolittle Raid. Above the city flew 80 B-29 Super Fortress bombers that had traveled over 1,500 miles, or 2,414 kilometers, from new American bases in the Mariana Islands. At first, the B-29s did little damage because they kept missing their targets. Japan was simply too far away. By the time the B-29s reached Japan, they did not have enough fuel left to fix their navigational errors or to adjust for high winds. The solution was to capture an island closer to Japan, where the B-29s could refuel. After studying the problem, American military planners decided to invade Iwo Jima. Iwo Jima was perfectly located, roughly halfway between the Marianas and Japan, but its geography was formidable. At its southern tip was Mount Suribachi, a dormant volcano. The terrain was rugged, with rocky cliffs, jagged ravines, and dozens of caves. Volcanic ash covered the ground. Even worse, the Japanese had built a vast network of caves and concrete bunkers connected by miles of tunnels. On February 19, 1945, 60,000 U.S. Marines landed on Iwo Jima. As the troops leapt from the amphitracks, they sank up to their ankles in the soft ash. Meanwhile, Japanese artillery began to pound the invaders. Robert Sherrod, who had been on the Tarawa, was shocked. The Marines died with the greatest possible violence. Nowhere in the Pacific have I seen such badly mangled bodies. Many were cut squarely in half. Legs and arms lay 50 feet, 15 meters, away from any body. Inch by inch, the Marines crawled inland, using flamethrowers and explosives to attack the Japanese bunkers. More than 6,800 Marines were killed before the island was captured. Admiral Nimitz later wrote that on Iwo Jima, uncommon valor was a common virtue. Firebombing devastates Japan. While American engineers prepared airfields on Iwo Jima, General Curtis LeMay, commander of the B-29s based in the Marianas, decided to change strategy. To help the B-29s hit their targets, he ordered them to drop bombs filled with napalm, a kind of jellied gasoline. The bombs were designed not only to explode, but also to start fires. Even if the B-29s missed their targets, the fires they started would spread to the intended targets. The use of firebombs was very controversial, because the fires would also kill civilians. However, LeMay could think of no other way to destroy Japan's war production quickly. Loaded with firebombs, B-29s attacked Tokyo on March 9, 1945. As strong winds fanned the flames, the firestorm grew so intense that it sucked the oxygen out of the air, asphyxiating thousands. As one survivor later recalled, "The fires were incredible, with flames leaping hundreds of feet into the air. Many people were gasping for breath. With every passing moment, the air became more foul. The noise was a continuing crashing roar. Fire winds filled with burning particles rushed up and down the streets. I watched people running for their lives. The flames raced after them like living things, striking them down. Wherever I turned my eyes, I saw people seeking air to breathe." Quoted in New History of World War II. The Tokyo firebombing killed over 80,000 people and destroyed more than 250,000 buildings. By the end of June 1945, Japan's six most important industrial cities had been firebombed, destroying almost half of their total urban area. By the end of the war, the B-29s had firebombed 67 Japanese cities. The invasion of Okinawa. Despite the massive damage the firebombing caused, there were few signs in the spring of 1945 that Japan was ready to quit. Many American officials believed the Japanese would not surrender until Japan had been invaded. To prepare for the invasion, the United States needed a base near Japan to stockpile supplies and build up troops. Iwo Jima was small and still too far away. After much discussion, military planners chose Okinawa, only 350 miles, or 563 kilometers, from Japan. American troops landed on Okinawa on April 1, 1945. Instead of defending the beaches, the Japanese troops took up positions in the island's rugged mountains. To dig the Japanese out of their caves and bunkers, the Americans had to fight their way up steep slopes against constant machine gun and artillery fire. More than 12,000 American soldiers, sailors, and Marines died during the fighting. But by June 22, 1945, Okinawa had finally been captured. The terms for surrender. Shortly after the United States captured Okinawa, the Japanese emperor urged his government to find a way to end the war. The biggest problem was the American demand for unconditional surrender. Many Japanese leaders were willing to surrender, but on one condition: the emperor had to stay in power. American officials knew that the fate of the emperor was the most important issue for the Japanese. Most Americans, however, blamed the emperor for the war and wanted him removed from power. President Truman was reluctant to go against public opinion. Furthermore, he knew the United States was almost ready to test a new weapon that might force Japan to surrender without any conditions. The new weapon was the atomic bomb. The Manhattan Project. In 1938, Leo Szilard, one of the world's top physicists, learned that German scientists had split the uranium atom. Szilard had been the first scientist to suggest that splitting the atom might release enormous energy. Worried that the Nazis were working on an atomic bomb, Szilard convinced the world's best-known physicist, Albert Einstein, to sign a letter Szilard had drafted and send it to President Roosevelt. In the letter, Einstein warned that by using uranium, extremely powerful bombs of a new type may be constructed. Roosevelt responded by setting up a scientific committee to study the issue. The committee remained skeptical until 1941, when they met with British scientists who were already working on an atomic bomb. The British research so impressed the Americans that they convinced Roosevelt to begin a program to build an atomic bomb. The American program to build an atomic bomb was codenamed the Manhattan Project and was headed by General Leslie R. Groves. The project's first breakthrough came in 1942, when Szilard and Enrico Fermi, another physicist, built the world's first nuclear reactor at the University of Chicago. Groves organized a team of engineers and scientists to build an atomic bomb at a secret laboratory in Los Alamos, New Mexico. J. Robert Oppenheimer led the team. On July 16, 1945, they detonated the world's first atomic bomb near Alamogordo, New Mexico. The decision to drop the bomb. Even before the bomb was tested, American officials began to debate how to use it. Admiral William Leahy, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, opposed using the bomb because it killed civilians indiscriminately. He believed that an economic blockade and conventional bombing would convince Japan to surrender. Secretary of War Henry Stimson wanted to warn the Japanese about the bomb while at the same time telling them that they could keep the emperor if they surrendered. Secretary of State James Burns, however, wanted to drop the bomb without any warning to shock Japan into surrendering. President Truman later wrote that he regarded the bomb as a military weapon and never had any doubts that it should be used. His advisors had warned him to expect massive casualties if the United States invaded Japan. Truman believed it was his duty as president to use every weapon available to save American lives. The Allies threatened Japan with prompt and utter destruction if the nation did not surrender unconditionally. But the Japanese did not reply. Truman then ordered the military to drop the bomb. On August 6, 1945, a B-29 bomber named the Enola Gay dropped an atomic bomb, codenamed Little Boy, on Hiroshima, an important industrial city. The bomb was dropped at 8:15 a.m. 43 seconds later, it exploded. Heat, radiation, and an enormous shockwave slammed into Hiroshima. The bomb destroyed 76,000 buildings, about 63% of the city. Somewhere between 80,000 and 120,000 people died instantly, and thousands more died later from burns and radiation sickness. Everywhere, as witness Nozaki Kiyoshi recalled, were horrific scenes. The center of the city was still burning bright red like live charcoal. Roof tiles were popping. We passed numerous war dead who had been carbonized. We found five or six half-burned roofless streetcars. Inside were piles of corpses smoldering under white smoke. A young mother lay face down, her baby tucked under her breast. They looked more like pink wax dolls than human beings. Quoted in Senso, the Japanese remember the Pacific War. The bombing stunned the Japanese. 3 days later, on August 9th, the Soviet Union declared war on Japan. Later that same day, the United States dropped another atomic bomb, codenamed Fat Man, on the city of Nagasaki, killing between 35,000 and 74,000 people. Faced with such massive destruction and the shock of the Soviets joining the war, the Japanese emperor ordered his government to surrender. On August 15th, 1945, VJ Day, Japan surrendered. On the other side of the world, Americans celebrated. For American soldiers, the news was especially good. As one veteran recalled, "We would not be obliged to run up the beaches near Tokyo, assault firing, while being mortared and shelled. For all the fake manliness of our facades, we cried with relief and joy. We were going to live. We were going to grow up to adulthood after all." The long war was finally over. Reading check. Analyzing. What arguments did Truman consider when deciding whether to use the atomic bomb? Building a new world. Well before the war ended, President Roosevelt had begun to think about what the world would be like after the war. The president had wanted to ensure that war would never again engulf the world. Creating the United Nations. President Roosevelt believed that a new international political organization could prevent another world war. In 1944, at the Dumbarton Oaks Estate in Washington, D.C., delegates from 39 countries met to discuss the new organization, which was to be called the United Nations, or UN. The delegates at the conference agreed that the UN would have a General Assembly, where every member nation in the world would have one vote. The UN would also have a Security Council with 11 members. Five countries would be permanent members of the Security Council: Britain, France, China, the Soviet Union, and the United States, the five big powers that had led the fight against the Axis. These five permanent members would each have veto power. On April 25, 1945, representatives from 50 countries came to San Francisco to officially organize the United Nations and design its charter or constitution. The General Assembly was given the power to vote on resolutions, to choose the non-permanent members of the Security Council, and to vote on the UN budget. The Security Council was responsible for international peace and security. It could investigate any international problem and propose settlements to countries that had disputes with each other. It could also take action to preserve the peace, including asking its members to use military force to uphold a UN resolution. Putting the enemy on trial. Although the Allies had declared their intention to punish German and Japanese leaders for their war crimes, they did not work out the details until the summer of 1945. In early August, the United States, Britain, France, and the Soviet Union created the International Military Tribunal, or IMT. At the Nuremberg trials in Nuremberg, Germany, the IMT tried German leaders suspected of committing war crimes. 22 leaders of Nazi Germany were prosecuted at Nuremberg. 3 were acquitted, and another 7 were given prison sentences. The remaining 12 were sentenced to death by hanging. Trials of lower-ranking government officials and military officers continued until April 1949. Those trials led to the execution of 24 more German leaders. Another 107 were given prison sentences. Similar trials were held in Tokyo for the leaders of wartime Japan. The IMT for the Far East charged 25 Japanese leaders with a variety of war crimes. Significantly, the Allies did not indict the Japanese emperor. They feared that any attempt to put him on trial would lead to an uprising by the Japanese people. 18 Japanese defendants were sentenced to prison. The rest were sentenced to death by hanging. The war crimes trials punished many of the people responsible for World War II and the Holocaust, but they were also part of the American plan for building a better world. As Robert Jackson, chief counsel for the United States at Nuremberg, observed in his opening statement to the court, "The wrongs we seek to condemn and punish have been so calculated, so malignant, and so devastating that civilization cannot tolerate their being ignored because it cannot survive their being repeated." Reading check. Describing. How is the United Nations organized? American literature. Jean Wakatsuki Houston was born in Inglewood, California. In 1942, when she was 7 years old, her family was uprooted from their home and sent to live at the Manzanar internment camp in California. The detainees had committed no crimes. They were detained simply because of their heritage. Farewell to Manzanar is the story about the Wakatsuki family's attempt to survive the indignities of forced detention and living behind barbed wire in the United States. From Farewell to Manzanar, by Jean Wakatsuki Houston and James D. Houston. The following excerpt describes Jean Wakatsuki's first impressions as she and her family arrived at the internment camp. We drove past a barbed wire fence, through a gate, and into an open space where trunks and sacks and packages had been dumped from the baggage trucks that drove out ahead of us. I could see a few tents set up, the first rows of black barracks, and beyond them, rows of barracks that seemed to spread for miles across the plain. People were sitting on cartons or milling around, waiting to see which friends or relatives might be on this bus. We had pulled up just in time for dinner. The mess halls weren't completed yet. They issued us army mess kits, the round metal kind that fold over, and plopped in scoops of canned Vienna sausage, canned string beans, steamed rice that had been cooked too long, and on top of the rice, a serving of canned apricots. The Caucasian servers were thinking that the fruit poured over rice would make a dessert. Among the Japanese, of course, rice is never eaten with sweet foods, only with salty or savory foods. After dinner, we were taken to Block 16, a cluster of 15 barracks. The shacks were built of one thickness of pine planking covered with tar paper. We were assigned two of these for the 12 people in our family group, and our official family number was enlarged by 3 digits, 16 plus the number of this barracks. We were issued steel army cots, 2 brown blankets each, and some mattress covers, which my brother stuffed with straw. Analyzing literature. 1. Recall and interpret. How did the food served at the camp show a lack of understanding of Japanese culture? 2. Evaluate and connect. Why do you think the families in the camps were assigned numbers? Interdisciplinary activity. Art and architecture. Draw plans for a community memorial for remembering Japanese Americans who were treated unfairly during World War II.